Oh, hello, I didn't see you there. This is Dr. Thaddeus Venture, and you're listening to the Long Box Guys. Whatever that means.
On the road, we're going home to the place where wild nerds roam with pretty girls and dudes and kids. Going to cons is our escape. It's like a pack of cookies in a star-filled sky where you can meet all your heroes and none of them fly.
Hey, Dad, what are the Long Box Guys going to do tonight, Brain?
The same thing the Long Box Guys do every night, Pinky. Drink and talk about comics. They're useless to taking over the world. Yes!
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Long Box Guys. My name is Tom, and with me, as always, are all my best friends since I was a very little kid. Mikey, how are you, and what are you drinking?
I'm doing excellent, and I am drinking a Blue Moon Belgian White.
Thank God you have been so not fucking funny the last couple of weeks because you were not drinking anything.
I agree.
Yeah.
It's fair.
Josh, how you doing and what are you drinking?
I'm tired, but I'm having a nice little Blue Point Toasted Lager. Just having a little light beer tonight.
Blue Point Toasted? You had to drive in from somewhere. Where were you today, my friend?
I was at Ananacon down in Connecticut, where I did my longsword class and played some tabletop role-playing games.
I would have gotten to that with you, but I was in upstate New York at a LARP myself. A lot of traveling today. I traveled 7 hours. Did you got me beat on that?
No, it was in Stamford. It's only about a 3-hour drive.
Oh, that's not so bad. Tommy, how are you today, my friend?
I'm doing okay. I only traveled an hour today.
And what are you drinking there?
I'm drinking Suntory.
Suntory?
Suntory.
Suntory time.
Suntory time. Josh, I'm sorry. I forgot to ask you what you were imbibing.
No, I said it. Blue Point Toasted Lager, a little light beerish for me. But
Sorry, I had to backtrack, go back in time to redo that one. Speaking of going back in time, let's go back all the way to when the X-Men were restarted by Chris Claremont. That's right. This week we're going to be talking about Chris Claremont's The X-Men, a movie that documentary that just came up on our feed, and we were so excited to see it. This documentary traces the evolution of the X-Men from the very beginning, shortly, to where Chris Claremont takes over and then goes very deep into the Chris Claremont 17-year run as the main driving writer. It goes into a lot of our favorite story arcs, including the Mutant Massacre, many other things. I thought it was a pretty decent representation and a nice deep delve. I enjoyed a lot of this. But let's just go around the table and just get a few thoughts. Mike, what was your just overall thought of the movie, of the documentary?
I think it explained a lot about what I loved about the X-Men and about the demise and commercialization of the X-Men.
Well said. I think that really did a good job doing that. Josh, what was your kind of overall thought?
From an information standpoint, I thought it was very good. They sort of circled through a lot of the major plots and storylines, gave us the background, talked to the editors. But I think the sort of the color commentary part and sort of the entertainment value, it's not a very exciting documentary. It is a glut of information. It's very good information, but there are some documentaries that are both very entertaining as well as informative. This did not that needle did not cross here. This was not entertainment. This was information. And don't get me wrong, I don't mind getting information about my favorite comic and my favorite writer, but still not particularly entertaining.
I'm going to just add on to that a little bit, saying it was a little bit. It was a great deep delve, and I'm sure that if I wasn't such a big X-Men nerd, it would have bored me to tears. But I am a big X-Men nerd, so it held me. But I can easily see how it wouldn't have held other people. Like some documentaries, no matter what it is, you can still watch it and be entertained and be informed. This one, if you weren't already into it, you weren't going to go into it.
Yeah, it also kind of made me a little sad in that Chris Claremont held the X-Men and even its spin-off titles for so long, and yet it kind of made me sad because he didn't get to see his full Vision take form. He didn't get to see Magneto take over Charles Xavier School. Instead, he kind of had things kind of forced down the pipeline towards him at the end, and that kind of made me a little sad.
Well, yeah, it really does show that evolution.
But he did have Magneto take over the school.
Yeah.
He just had to reverse it later on.
Yeah. Yeah, but it wasn't his Vision.
And I can also see how mad he was, because, like, I can still see him just talking about it years later, that after it happened, how mad he seems to be that Jean Grey was ever brought back.
Yeah.
Well, think about it. He put 17 years of his creative energies into this one comic book, which that's an incredible run for anybody. And to make it the number one selling comic book in the world is a testament to his creativity. However, I think the documentary does an interesting job, but they don't really focus on the difference between art and commercialism and how those two can intertwine, and then who wins out. And it's obviously Marvel Comics isn't there as an art form, right? It's not there to promote the art of comic books. It's there to make money. It's a business. And that's what ultimately drives Chris Claremont out of the X-Men, because he can't keep on doing it because they want too many X-Men stories for one man to keep on just driving everything. And it also, comic books is a long-form storytelling where nothing essentially changes. You know, they don't want a lot of character progression because they want people who know the characters to be able to come back and relate to the characters at any time. That's why you see characters dying and then coming back, because they need to reset it, right? That's why you see Superman being married and, oh, now he's not married. Now he's married again. You know, you see these kind of evolutions going on, and the X-Men is a prime example of a guy who did so well, it crushed him.
I think it actually – I'm going to disagree with you slightly. I think it actually did an excellent job of showing how art and commercialism are not very well suited to work with each other. We can see the decline of the X-Men as an art definitely pick up as the X-Men as a money generator starts picking up. You know, that greed gets to people, and they start wanting more and more and more. And then editorial decisions get taken away from Wheezy and Chris, and it just kind of all spirals out of control. But that brings me to my next thing I wanted to talk about. What was your favorite parts of the movie? Mikey, do you have a favorite little caveat or information nugget?
I did appreciate the fact that how we got fucking Thor and Power Pack involved in the mutant massacre, because
it's finally explained.
Yeah, it's finally been explained that answers this nagging question of why I gotta buy Power Pack and Thor if I want to read an X-Men story, because Louise Simonson was the editor for the Uncanny X-Men at the time, and she was also writing Power Pack, and was like, oh, I want to be part of the crossover. And her husband, Walt Simonson, was like, well, I want to play too.
It makes a lot more sense now. It's like when you go back to the old Scooby-Doo cartoons, they had that guest star and it'd always be these random people. But then you find out that the person who was booking the Scooby-Doo thing, he was the agent for all those random people. So he just kept throwing them in there. Same thing with the Muppet Show. It all makes sense when you know that little backstage bit of information.
And it also makes sense that they had a good time doing it, right? They were excited about the mutant massacre, that they were going to have crossovers with other books. And then it was so successful that the bosses from higher up were like, yeah, every year,
every year.
We want another crossover.
No matter what happens.
It doesn't matter what you're doing.
Just no matter what you're doing, you're crossing that shit over to every book.
You can cross that shit over, and Josh is just making a face, because this is where you kind of started losing interest a little bit, right, Josh?
I mean, certainly that crossover event illustrated what the industry was going to become. in the more like the mid-90s. I mean, it took a little while for that to sort of cascade into the horribleness of crossovers where you never even knew what books you were picking up every week if you wanted the whole story. But when that series came out, they literally had a panel on the comics showing you the order to read and how to read them and which books you had to go through. And that was the first time like Marvel really put a bad taste in my mouth. And yeah, 4 or 5 years later, it just became untenable for me. I just put everything down.
That taste just kept getting worse.
Yeah.
It did not get better with chewing. Josh, did you have a favorite little bit of the documentary?
No, it was great just to see my dad on screen. Just there, live action, just doing his thing. Telling me all the same tales he told me as a kid about the X-Men. It's nice.
It is nice. Chris Claremont is
telling
a lot
you about
of ways.
How when the telling you about how when the Pope came to the office and started blessing pages.
That was hilarious. When archbishops came in and blessed the magazine, that was – and what did he say? Most of us were Jews and some of us were worse. What? That's a lie. I wrote it down and backed up to make sure that's what he said. Most of us were Jews and some of us were worse. Trying to figure out what he meant by that. Protestant? I don't know. That might be my favorite line from the whole damn thing. How about you, Tommy? You have a favorite part, a little favorite little tidbit that you learned?
I mean, that was – when they were talking about the Pope comic, I thought that was hilarious. But yeah, I mean, a lot of it was just very interesting in how, you know, how he kind of left when things get forced down his throat. That was kind of interesting.
That'll bring us to our next part where we talk a little bit about the introduction of Jim Lee and Rob Liefeld. Before that, though, I just wanted to say my favorite part. I really enjoyed that a lot of the other people on the team, everyone always said, why can't this character – is there any reason why this character can't be a woman? Is there any reason why this character can't be African-American? Is there any reason they went through they really embraced diversity a little bit earlier and a little bit better than I think a lot of teams did, especially collaborative teams. So I really enjoyed that part. I thought that was really interesting to see that. And just the camaraderie that creative team had together seemed really fun.
Yeah.
It really seems like lightning in a bottle.
Also, it seemed like from the documentary, it seems like at the time, the writer and the artist were really working together, and towards the end, when things were being forced down his throat, it was really the artist forcing three things down their throats, and that seemed to be like more the norm for not only Chris Claremont but for other writers at Marvel. That was coming through in the documentary.
Well, let's get into that a little bit. So when Straight Jim Shooter left, and we got Jim Lee coming in with Rob Liefeld. It didn't seem like they were casting the best light in this documentary. They certainly aren't the bad guys. I remember the end of this Claremont run where he was doing so many magazines. There literally was one that I remember where the girls go shopping and then the boys go to the mall. It did seem to lose a little bit of steam in my mind. But I don't think they really portrayed Jim Lee and Rob Liefeld in the best of light. What do you guys think about the Rob Liefeld, Jim Lee stage?
I can go ahead, LT.
Well, I mean, in general, when I was collecting comics at that time, it got to a point where Marvel Comics really did seem like you could either get good story or you could get good art. But you couldn't get good story and good art in the same book. And that's kind of when I stopped reading comics. And from this documentary, it seemed like at some point the artists started ignoring some of what the writers were doing and started forcing in some of their own stuff, regardless of what the writers were doing.
LT, let me just interrupt with one thing. You don't have to pussyfoot around that thing. Rob Liefeld says straight up that he ignored what some of the writing was and drew his own stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't have to say it was. And it kind of made
a lot more sense as to what was going on, because it's like that's when the books started sucking at Marvel. In my opinion, I mean, it seemed like the story started sucking, and it was like, oh, we can either have good art or we can have good books, but we can't have good books, good story with good art. But Mike, you were about to say something.
If you look at any X-Men comic from like maybe 95, which is when the run started for Claremont, to maybe 180, 190, you can see these classic comics just from the cover and tell me what the storyline is, right? Even the one where it's just Oro and Forge on the cover, where they're just hanging out.
It looked like they were on a date, and that's exactly what it was.
Exactly, yeah. Right? Yeah. All those covers you can look at and you're like, okay, I know the story that was at. The number one selling comic of all time is X-Men number one. Can any of you, without looking, tell me what that story was?
From the cover, I can see the cover in my head.
It had 16 different covers.
Thing. Yeah, but it's Magneto doing this.
That's one of the covers.
Yeah, that's the only one I remember because I just saw it.
They had actually five different covers that they released in mass, and then two that they also were very limited editions, but seven covers. But can you tell me what the story is?
I don't remember it.
No, exactly. You know why? Because it sucked.
Why did we all buy it? Because we all wanted to buy a number one X-Men.
Exactly. It's the number one selling comic. And here are four guys who all are comic geeks and love the frickin' X-Men, and we can't tell you what the storyline is in the best-selling X-Men comic of all time, because it was all bought for Jim Lee's art, and everybody was like, oh, this is going, I'll get this first X-Men number one, and I'll be able to bag it and tag it and then sell it, and now you can find these fucking things in a quarter bin because they sold so many copies and nobody gives a shit about it. And the storyline is Magneto goes back to being a bad guy, which totally defeats the whole story arc that Chris Claremont introduced into the X-Men. Magneto was just a general bad guy, and then Claremont was like, why is he just a general bad guy? We have to give the bad guys a reason for being bad guys. They don't want to just be evil. Good characters always have motivation, and that's why he created the entire backstory for Magneto, who never had a backstory for, what, 20 years, 30 years, until he decided to give him an actual backstory.
Now, do you guys remember the comic where Magneto does almost kill Kitty Pryde? That was a great one. That was a terrific scene. He's holding her limp body. She's just entered the X-Men. She's actually wearing one of those ridiculous costumes because she was going through that phase where she was cycling through her costume every week. And Magneto realizes he's almost killed a child, and they're about to fight him, and he's holding the body. He's like, "Fight me? Are you insane? We have to get to a hospital."
Yeah.
There's no time to fight. There's no time to fight. We have to get to a hospital. I love that. Yeah. That was one of my faves.
Yeah, I mean, he had the hero's journey for Magneto, and it took over 100 issues to go there, but he made it there, and Magneto had been reformed. He was in charge of Xavier's school. He had taken over the dream for Xavier, and then, of course, they were like, nope, we need to bring Xavier back. Magneto needs to be a bad guy, because that's how most people remember him.
Yeah, Jean Grey's got to come back to life.
You notice that Oro had her Storm's punk look. She's got to have hair. She's got to be the African goddess again. You know, it all circled back around. Like, let's change them back to the way they were. That's the whole thing that there are in comic books. There are a bunch of people who died and should remain dead. One, Uncle Ben should always be dead. Thank God they have kept that. Two, Jean Grey should have remained dead, because the whole storyline, the whole effect was monumentous. And three, Barry Allen should have remained dead.
Monumentous?
Yeah.
We can get away with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Monumental and momentous.
Yeah.
Monumentous.
All right. Monumentous. Also, Barry Allen had tons of monumentous.
Also, monumentous really was fast. A member of the Hellfire Club for a while.
Yeah. You control your size. Not his size, your size.
And if Stone Boy ever becomes really big, he will be tremendously monumentous.
Monumentous. Monumentalist. Because he'll be a monument to himself. All good points. I was just asking whether or not you thought it was a little heavy-handed the way they treated Jim Lee and Rob Liefeld. I thought it was a little heavy-handed.
Okay. That's fair.
I mean, do we blame them for the X-Men sucking for a number of years?
I mean,
a little bit.
We talk about
They were the ones behind Heroes Reborn.
Yeah.
Thanks for the reminder.
You guys are welcome.
Also, the worst picture of Captain America ever drawn, that's Rob Liefeld, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The one with Captain America has like 9 chests.
Chesticles.
Chesticles.
Plenty of pouches.
And
though.
A tiny little head. A tiny little head. 9 chests. Tiny little head. I'm just glad you didn't have more pouches.
What was Claremont's final issue of the Uncanny X-Men?
Oh, oof.
I don't know.
Was it a swimsuit issue?
Not a swimsuit issue.
Because they put some of those out under Claremont.
They did.
It's going to be around 364, I'm guessing.
64, that's not what this says.
I'm guessing. That's why
Mike, you're smarter than Wikipedia. It was right before issue number one.
No, wait, 364 was that was a horrible issue. It's going to be a lot before then. It's going to be in the late 200s or early 300s.
It's going to say maybe 288.
It's close. 279, the last issue of the Muir Island saga.
Let's. I don't want to end this on a bad note. I want to have everyone have a great taste in their mouth. Chris Claremont was a genius. My biggest clear taste in their mouth, a sparkling clean taste in your mouths, everybody. My biggest takeaway and problem with it is they really should have given him like, hey, Chris, 10 more issues. Do whatever you want, and we're going to say a fond farewell to you after 17 years. He didn't have a big Bon Voyage party, and I think that's a damn shame. I'm glad that he was able to get a little input into the movies, a little bit of input, but I think it was a shame that he didn't get a little bit more for a send-off as the X-Men. So let's everyone talk about their favorite Chris Claremont. I got mine already crystallized in my head. This is kind of a mini-goat right here, but this is so personal, no one can argue it. Favorite Chris Claremont issue, Mikey?
God Loves, Man Kills. A Marvel graphic novel number 4.
Awesome. Awesome pick. That is a great pick. Josh, you got yours there, Galvanized?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Colossus Kills Riptide.
Go ahead, say the line. Say the line.
Make peace with your gods, little man. You are next.
That is awesome.
I definitely do not have that signed by my dad.
We should get that one signed for you.
No, it is. I didn't know. I was being sarcastic.
Tommy, what do you got there, buddy?
I really like the Brood Christmas episode there that we keep talking about, and I can't remember the name right now.
The chimney.
Yes.
Yes. That is one of my absolute favorites. You know what? I'm going to say I'm tied for that. I'll say that one and Kitty's Fairy Tale.
Yeah, I know you like Fairy Tale's pretty good.
It was just such a nice departure. She's just telling a little bedtime story. There's no stakes in the game, and yet I'm still invested. Right? It's just a kid's story. There's no stakes in the game, and I'm still invested in the characters and having a great time. And seeing Nightcrawler as a Corsair was great.
Awesome.
Yeah. So totally, we're all agreed that if you're a fan, watch it.
Yeah.
So he created over 170 different heroes and villains.
They all sprinkled. Not every one of them, though.
Not a lot of them are what you'd call
winners. Including Arcade. We might as well just pop that out there.
Yeah, he definitely did. Yeah. Black Tom Cassidy.
Black Tom Cassidy.
Caliban, Kalisto, Cannonball, all the New Mutants.
Yeah.
And by the way, when you say there's no good art with good stories, some of that's just you. You didn't like the New Mutant artwork, but some people love that. I hated it.
I hated it, but I have gone back and I am now collecting all of the New Mutants because I can get past the artwork just so I can read the stories. Which is weird that the new team had a much more darker and more adult theme going on than the original team.
Yeah.
But really, Tom, when they started doing the foil covers and all of the flashy stuff, Marvel really had a hard time finding like good art and a good story in one book.
I agree, but some of that is a little bit of taste. That New Mutants style, which, once again, I do not like, really was other people's cups of teas, not ours.
Right, but I'm talking even later than that, when Claremont was forced out of it, of the X-Men. Like that's really when Marvel really started to not really care much about quality of story as much.
Yeah, that first New Mutants run was one of the first books I had start to finish.
That's a good point, yeah. That was one of the new comic books that we could actually like be on the ground floor of. It's one of the first ones I remember. Like Power Pack, I remember, hey, this is a brand new team. We could be on the ground floor. Unfortunately, I was.
I'm almost done with that Power Pack. I got another issue yesterday, Josh. Soon you will have the entire run of Power Pack.
You lucky son of a bitch. All right. I guess that does it for the movie. Does anyone have any final thoughts? I'm going to say watch it.
If you're a fan of X-Men.
Yeah, you should. Yeah.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
That brings us to the front of the long box, then. Mikey, what do you got at the front of the long box?
I'm going to stick with our X-Men theme, and I'm going to go with Fallen Angels number one. It is the new series It goes along with the X-Men, X-Force, Marauders.
Wait, you bailed on Companion?
I bailed on Compendium.
Oh, Compendium. Okay, go ahead.
I'm afraid of using anything more than a two-syllable word now because I feel I will be momentously chastised.
Okay.
We liked your new word, Mike.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to castigate you.
Stop teasing me with big words. So anyway, if you are a fan of Psylocke, and I don't mean the Betsy Braddock Psylocke, I mean the Quanon Psylocke. This is a book all about her. I am not a fan of this book. I would not recommend it for any of our listeners, but if you really like it, go ahead and try it. I know.
So your recommendation this week is a book that you don't recommend.
I'm not recommending it. I'm reviewing it. I'm telling you, it's not my cup of tea, and I'm not recommending it to anybody unless you are a fan of the Psylocke character and want to see the journey of Quanon after she has been divested of the Betsy Braddock personality.
Does she go on the hero's journey? Because I like that.
I don't know if it's a hero's journey. It's a lot of killing.
I like that too, kind of. Tommy, what do you got in the back of the long box?
I have something relatively new. It's called Misadventures in Money Management, put out by the Consumer Protection Bureau. You can get it at mimm.gov. It is an interactive graphic novel experience that teaches you about finance.
Who published it?
The Consumer Finance Bureau.
I didn't mean who published it. Do we have anyone like cool doing the art for it or anything?
No, it's government sponsored, so they didn't indicate any of that stuff. But it's kind of interesting. It's got little different. It's mostly military centric, so I found it that way, and I've been promoting it that way on my new job.
The only reason I ask is some of those military pamphlets that Mikey and I had to read in the military, like what to do about FOB and dental hygiene. It's more than you think. Some of those were actually done by some graphic artists and some writers that were actually name-worthy. The guy that did the Beetle Bailey comic books, he started out doing the Stars and Stripes newspaper, and that's how the Beetle Bailey character first became created. Sam and Jeff, which was like a famous military thing in Stars and Stripes about these two kind of dog-eared soldiers, started out that way, and then he moved on to do a bunch of pamphlets for the military afterwards. So that wasn't like a trap. That was like sometimes they actually do get really
cool. It's a trap.
It's a trap.
It's a trap.
All right. So you would recommend?
Yeah, I think it's a really nifty way to bone up on some different money management stuff.
You said bone.
Yeah, I did.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. If you send me that link, I'll put it up on the Twitter feed so people can actually take a look at it if it's fun like that. I've watched a couple of those military ones that were not only informative, but were at least a little bit entertaining. Yeah.
And you can also put up our digital code for Fallen Angels number one. If you want to see what I don't like, it'll be your chance to get a free copy. Go to @TheLongBoxGuys on Twitter and subscribe.
Speaking of what Mike doesn't like, it'll just be me holding up a thesaurus.
Holy shit, it's a completely free episode.
Oh my gosh. You know what's not free? The GOAT, but it's well worth the 25 cents that you can invest. The greatest of all time, where we talk about mundane shit that we find amusing. It's an extra podcast. Every week that we put out a podcast, you can go to patreon.com/TheLongBoxGuys to become a Patreon for a mere $1 a month.
$1 a month? Are you insane?
We are.
We are. Yeah. But we do appreciate it. It does. Yeah. Sorry, that was a little tangential. That's usually your purview there, Josh. Got a tangent for us in it?
I do, actually. I think they announced, and way earlier than I thought, a February 2020 release date for the Lock and Key TV show.
I know. I saw that. Yeah.
And what's it going to be on?
Oh, my God.
I think Amazon – was it Amazon Prime?
It's Prime or Netflix.
Yeah, I think it's Prime.
I thought it was Netflix, but I could be wrong.
Netflix.
Yeah, it's Netflix.
I hope they do a good job.
February release date for Lock and Key. I'm super excited about it. What's coming down the pipe here that you're most excited about? TV, movie? What's the next thing we're looking for?
For me, it's the new damn it, I'm blanking on the name. Go by me.
For me, it's
The new Kingsman movie, sorry. The new Kingsman movie comes out in January, I think. They go to the beginning of the Kingsman, how they get first formed during World War II, and it looks awesome.
I'm really looking forward to this TV show that's going to be on Netflix starting February 7th, 2020, called Lock and Key.
Well played, my good man.
Yeah. I can't believe it's coming that soon. Like, I just heard of, like, I just heard about it in July, and then they're like, oh, yeah, February. Bam. Oh, bam.
It's going to be so good.
I'm really excited for He-Man and Masters of the Universe.
Wait, what? There's a new He-Man coming out?
There's a new He-Man coming out written by Kevin Smith and Mark Bernardin.
Really?
I believe Mark Bernardin is part of that. But yeah, Kevin Smith is going to be doing some of the writing as part of the writing room, and I can't wait for it.
All right. Wait, it's what, cartoon or live action?
Cartoon.
Okay.
It's by the same animators that do Castlevania.
Really? Yeah. Wow. Okay.
So Kevin Smith said that when they don't have to write out the fighty fight scenes, they just write fighty fight, and the animators just do the rest.
Nice. Fighty fight.
Fighty, fighty, fight. They do it. Castlevania was terrific. I really enjoyed it the first two seasons. I think they're coming out with the third now, so hopefully that'll be good also. And speaking of good, my 3-18 this week. Everyone's had a chance to do it, to watch it, I hope. The Harley Quinn cartoon. Mikey, what do you give it?
I'm going to give it a 14. It is growing on me with every episode.
Excellent. All right, it's already growing. I'm like totally in. I gave the first episode a solid 16. I'm going to stick with a 16 with a little bit of room to grow to 17. I think it's getting that good for me. Tommy, I know you watched the first episode at least. What do you think?
I'm going to give it a 15, and it might even be like resting on the edge of the table about to edge onto a 16.
Good. All right. Glad you're
with me. I really liked Frank.
Yep.
I mean, when Frank said, "Oh, how do you think I feel? I was in a dog park getting shit on for 10 years." I thought that was hilarious.
Frank is a talking plant, by the way.
And Poison Ivy's best friend.
And, yeah, well, Harley Ivy's Quinn's best friend. Best friend.
Yeah.
But is she?
Frank is hilarious.
I was all in as soon as I found out that as soon as they started talking about ordering Thai food, And
text me what you want.
No, I just told you what I want. No, but I'll forget. Then you're going to need half of mine. Right in the middle of a battle scene, I'm like, I'm in. You guys, you get it. It's good. Let's keep going.
Yeah.
Josh, how about you, buddy?
I'm going to park it at 9 and see how the rest of the series goes.
You know, that's fine. I think it's going to grow on you. I think it's going to bring you over.
Did you watch both episodes?
No, I've only seen the first.
So, I mean, I wasn't that big a fan of the first episode, but after talking to Tom and talking about the different lines, I realized there was a lot of it that I did find amusing. I love that Alan Tudyk is the Joker because, you know, we're basically brothers at this point.
Yeah.
But he also is the voice for Clayface and Calendar Man.
Calendar Man was also great.
But you know who was also great in episode 2? Fucking Kite Man. Holy moly. Him and Bane. I was dying laughing at everything Kite Man and Bane did. And I love the fact that the Joker is having so much problems with his contractor.
You know how hard it is to get a contractor at the Hacienda? You can't keep people coming in every day. Falling into vats of fucking acid and expecting, you know, the next guy to just walk in. OSHA's going to have a problem with you sooner or later. Are you going to go work for Joker? Nah, dog, I'm going to pass on that one. I'm going to go work at Arcade's place. He pays well, and I think I can figure out how to make a giant pinball machine that also shoots darts. I think I got this. All right.
I was going to say, I was a little disappointed there was no Batman in the second episode because I love Dietrich Bader as Batman. I loved him in The Brave and the Bold. I'm glad he put the cowl back on, even though it's only figuratively, not literally. And I also, I at first was really did not like Christopher Maloney as James Gordon because he's not doing James Gordon. And then I realized he's doing his own version of James Gordon.
He's not. He's not. You know what he's doing? In my mind, he's doing James Gordon the way Harley Quinn sees James Gordon.
Ah.
That's the way I'm picturing it. So Harley Quinn isn't seeing, like, James Gordon, the stoic, you know, serious guy that he is. She's seeing a cartoon version of James Gordon in her mind's eye in that crazy straw of a brain of hers, and that's what she's seeing. That's why Batman's weird, and that's why James Gordon is weird. James Gordon? Yeah. That's why Gordon's weird. Because, you know, that's the way she sees these characters. And we're seeing the world through her, you know, worldview.
Even when she's not there.
Even when she's not there.
Okay.
It's her story. Yeah. If you go that way with it, James, that Gordon makes a lot more sense.
The only thing, I think the reason Josh is not on board for this is because the least interesting character in this is Harley Quinn.
Kind of true.
It's true.
Yeah.
I mean, even the kid at the bar mitzvah, I was more enthralled with his story than Harley's story.
It's true.
I mean, he's becoming a man.
What? Did you really finger bang that girl? Did you?
It's dark.
It's dark. He doesn't know where he put that finger.
Are you ready to kill somebody? Did you finger bang that girl?
I pulled it out and it smelled like a plant. I don't know what to say.
For those of you who are wondering, this is show is on the DC Universe, and it is not suitable for children, even though it is a cartoon.
Oh, it's definitely not suitable for kids. Put a lock on that thing.
Yeah.
All right, I think that'll just about do it for us today. Thank you, everybody, for listening to us again, as you do every single week. We really do appreciate it. Mikey, do we have some plugs this week?
Well, obviously, we'd like to thank our friends over at Kirby Crackle. They provide our geek rock music every week. You can check them out at kirbycracklemusic.com. And don't forget to check out some of our other friends' podcasts, including Movies Made Me with Cheryl Jones and whosnextgaming.com with Seth and the Boys, where they talk about movies, gaming, sex robots. comics. All kinds of good stuff.
All kinds of good stuff. Josh, who would you like to thank this week?
Let's go with Pensacon in Pensacola, Florida, coming February 28th to March 1st. We'll be down there doing all sorts of stuff, multiple panels, trivia, and karaoke with our friends Ian and Tammy. So come on down to Pensacola, the biggest, best little convention in the country.
And yeah, we just had a chance. Oh, go ahead.
I will be during our trivia contest, we will be giving out copies of the issue where Green Arrow and Red Arrow go to the strip club, because I found four of them in a bargain bin and I was like, these are all coming with me, baby.
Nice. I got to read that one. So we just had a chance to talk to Ian and Tammy just a couple of days ago on a Skype call. They seem really excited about coming on down to Pensacon, as they always are, and doing karaoke again this year. I was a little worried they were burnt out because it was a lot of work, but they said they really enjoyed it. So let's have another great karaoke sing-along year. Tom, who'd you like to thank?
I would like to thank GeekOrthodox.com.
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 Hello, Tammy.
GeekOrthodox.com, purveyor of fine t-shirts and other geeky things, such as stained glass prints and Johnny Skywalker rocks glasses. And
socks.
Argyle socks.
And Christmas cards.
Christmas cards? Yeah. I need some of those.
The fuck you say? I'm saying it. They have Christmas cards.
I didn't know that. Maybe I should zip over there and get some Christmas cards.
You should totally get the Star Wars Christmas cards that say, "May the Sith be with you."
Ooh, I like that.
I don't know if that's what they say.
We Sith you a Merry Christmas. That's better.
Could be.
Yeah.
It's very
I would like
witty.
To thank my new gaming shop, Alpha and Omega Gaming, over in Quincy, Mass. That's right.
Quincy, Mass. I know about that place.
I know you do. Quincy, Mass, unlikely as it is, I like Quincy now. Alpha and Omega Gaming is great, especially if you're not as deep a player as some players. I love tabletop games, but there are so many good ones out there that I don't know all the rules to every single one out there. Nonetheless, people are still allowing me to play with them. Bless their hearts.
And if we could just give a quick moment of silence for Carol Spiney, who passed away today. He brought so much joy to millions of children as both Oscar the Grouch and Big Bird. I was so happy that I got to meet him at Pensacon a couple years ago. He will be truly missed.
Such a nice man. I remember going over and talking to him with you. Just a sweet, sweet guy.
And if you ever watch that biography about him and his wife, it's just beautiful.
He and Stan Lee, if ever there were two guys destined to die of broken heart disease, it was those two men.
I think his wife is still alive.
Yeah, but she's not for long.
Wow.
I'm calling my shot early, guys. I'm sorry, but they were so in love. I'm going to go with broken heart disease within six. Prove me wrong, Miss Spivey.
That's what they're calling
Prove
it now.
She's stronger than me.
Some people call it broken heart disease. Some people call it foul play.
So, Josh, Sesame Street, is that your sector?
Sesame Street will always be my sector.
And LT, you got any words of wisdom for us?
Yeah. Did you finger bang that girl, Mikey? Did you finger bang that girl?
Finger banged her right on the Heather Thomas poster.
And Mikey, what's this podcast like to you?
It's like Drunk History, but for comics.
And don't forget what I always say. Don't diss what you hate. Just promote what you love. You're going to live longer. Thanks from everybody at the Longbox, guys.
She did look frightened.
She did look frightened.
I mean, she looked she looked like she had just got off a Peloton bike frightened. Wow.